הקצה משודרת מאולפני BPM. המכללה של תעשיית המוזיקה.
BPM, המציעה מגוון קורסים מובילים בתחומי רדיו ופודקאסטים, קריינות, די-ג'יי, סאונד והפקה, פיתוח קול ועוד. פרטים באתר bpm-music.com.
הקצה. ועכשיו ברדיו הקצה, Brain Trust עם אופר טיסר.
Grieving for the children that he or she never had, or you can think of someone who is grieving for the life they might have led but for some reason or other did not. But what I want to talk about is a very straightforward and the most common notion of grief, and that is losing a loved one. Now, what's interesting here is that grief is not just sadness. Grief is not, in other words, a basic emotion. Nevertheless, grief is pretty clearly universal. All people die. All people lose people who are close to them. And what's more, all people know that they're going to die. Sad about nothing. But grief has a very particular kind of object. Grief is this serious loss. Grief, perhaps, is the start of all thinking or all philosophy. One of the things we find is evidence that the Neanderthals must have thought in whatever language or concepts they thought, about death and what happened after death. There's a sense in which death is something that is so basic that all of the other concepts of religion, philosophy, astronomy are just clouded by contrast. If you've lost someone close to you and you don't grieve, your friends and possibly you yourself will start wondering what's wrong with you. Thank you. death is right there. And they're just in a good mood, and they're giggling away and telling some off-color jokes. What they're doing is not just inappropriate, but it's downright unethical. How we would treat someone who lost someone very close to them, a spouse or a child, and didn't grieve at all. But the way grief is often discussed as a painful emotion, wouldn't it be good if someone could simply take a pill, and I'm sure there are many available, that would just remove the grief, remove the pain? But most of us would consider that to be an immoral thing to do. Because grief is not just a negative emotion. It's not just a painful emotion. Grief is something that we ought to feel, at least under the right circumstances. It's to face up to questions about death and how we feel about it and about grieving. All sorts of very interesting ways. One of the interesting ways is the way that culture influences death. And so you have hippie funerals, you have Hispanic funerals, you have frustrating, and you are motivated consequently to do something about it. So as one of my favorite psychologists, Nico Freida, has argued for many years, an emotion essentially involves what he calls an action tendency. So in anger, we are tempted to do something, maybe not anything in particular, but we're tempted to do something. But in grief, it seems to me people tend to do nothing. They tend to withdraw. They sort of retreat to the rooms. They don't want to talk to people. And it seemed to me that this was very much at odds with what the other emotions tended to do. There was another problem, and that was that emotions we tend to think of as feelings. And some of them are short feelings. Only last a couple seconds or a couple minutes. Others are feelings that go on for a long time. I talked about long-term anger that may go on for years. And of course, love is an emotion we like to think of as going on for decades. But grief, and this I would say, like love, grief is a process. And people like Anna Cooper Ross have for years argued that there's a process of grief which involves other things, lots of other emotions. So part of the process of grief is denial. Part of the process of grief is anger. And the question is, what do anger and denial have to do with this emotion called grief? But that's why even in the earlier lectures I started to make the point that emotions are not just feelings. They're not just states. but emotions are processes, and I would say this, of all emotions, but especially of grief, and with it, I would say, of love. Because to say that an emotion is a process is to say that it is something that changes with time, it develops. That grief isn't something that happens all at once, and it's not something you get rid of just by taking a pill. But the process of working through grief, that's grief. And so to think about grief as just a momentary feeling of some sort, it seems to me to be to misunderstand it. And finally, one of the most perplexing things as a philosopher was, I was thinking, well, emotions generally have to do with desires. So in anger, you want to punish someone. In love, you want to caress someone. In jealousy, you want to protect your turf. In envy, you want to take something. In shame, you want to hide. But what is the desire in grief? Again, thinking about grief in particular as the grief at the loss of a loved one. Well, it would seem that what you want in grief is the utterly impossible. What you would like is for the person who has died to come back. And it's a very strange emotion indeed that has as its characteristic desire, in fact, some people would say as its only characteristic desire, the desire for something which is utterly impossible. Now, grief, of course, triggers off thoughts. And some of these are thoughts of the loved one, and I will talk about that at more length in a moment. But grief also has the property of reminding us of our own mortality. And this is a point that's often made, but I think it's often not appreciated for quite what it is. Because there's a sense in which this is a kind of narcissism. Grief, by its nature, is about the loss of the other person. And yet, as soon as we start feeling about our own death, then there's a sense in which we have lost that connection with the other person. That we might recognize we're both mortal, fair enough. But insofar as you feel death for yourself, that's a different kind of emotion. But let me take a moment and just talk about this fear of death, because it seems to me something fascinating and it's also misunderstood. Because many years ago, 2,000 years ago to be exact, the Greek philosopher Epicurus worried at length about the fear of death, and came up with a rather uplifting solution. He said, in a very short phrase, death is nothing. And because it's nothing to be afraid of. You're alive, you're having experiences, you're having some pleasures, and then suddenly you're not there anymore. No more experiences, no more pleasures. So what's the problem? Now, what is an afterlife? Well, that, of course, varies. If you believe in the Christian afterlife, it might be a very rich experiential eternity. If you believe in reincarnation, as well, like many Asian philosophies do, then reincarnation isn't quite so cheery. You come back as something else, and possibly, if you haven't been a nice person,
and I see stars, but a star nonetheless. A convenient memory is a gift from God, a gift from life and sodomy. The domination of life, break and brand all secret dreams. Divine godlike, godlike, sperm-like. We gather, we sow, we scream. And phrase for us, near certainty. The siren void fulfills destiny. The death will seal their prince liberty. Caught in sudden, endless, earthless vacancy. The domination of life. Break and brand all secret dreams. Divine godlike, godlike sperm. We gather, we sow, we speed. Paranoia is an icy start, but a start nonetheless. A convenient memory is a gift from God, bereft of life and sodomy. The siren voids old fools' destiny. The death will seal their crown prince liberty.
My suggestion is that what most people are afraid of when they're afraid of death is not what will happen to them in the afterlife, because most people seem to be of the opinion that they're going to heaven. It's sort of like when you ask people, are you above average in terms of certain kinds of skills? 80% will say yes. Well, my sense is that 80% at least of the people who think that there's an afterlife also think that they're going for the good place, not the bad place.
Jesus Christ, Muhammad, the Muhammad.
You are born. You're dying from your own poison. Snow to blame upon you. You're fucking wild. Look to her in the storm of the ball. Superior, every respect. I watch you wither away and become tossed in the glass. Thought you are in the storm to fall. Superior, every respect. I watch you wither away and become tossed in the glass. Not existent. An empty shell you've become. Laying by your self-pity. The long, lost and unknown.
But it seems to me that what death is about and what we are worried about is not death but dying. And so it has to do with the sort of getting sick, being in pain, degeneration of being towards death. It also has to do with worrying about last moments.
So bad.
talk about love. One of the pieces I tried to defend is that love is coming to identify yourself and identify yourself with and through the other person, and that's your new identity. Well, in grief, that identity has been shattered. But then the action, and it's a very important action indeed, is to withdraw and try and get oneself together and figure out, okay, now who am I? We don't really give much attention to death or grief or their meaning. In most lines of work, if you have a death in the family, even someone fairly close, you get 2 or 3 personal days to attend to the funeral and the legal matters, and then you're expected to be back at work and sort of operating up to snuff. In other societies, I think much more realistically, grief goes on a long time. In fact, some societies, and perhaps this is overdoing it, in some societies, grief goes on for an entire lifetime. You never get over it. You're not supposed to get over it. But several months ago, I was in New Zealand, a place I often love to visit, and I was invited to a Maori funeral. Now, the Maoris are the local Polynesians there. They have a very rich, established society. And one of the interesting things that I found was that, first of all, the funeral doesn't go on for an hour, and then everybody goes back to work or to a wake or whatever. But a funeral goes on for weeks. And what happens in the funeral is that the person who is bereaved is not allowed to retreat to his or her room and spend time alone, but rather he or she is more or less forced to spend time with the group. And the idea is that they are still part of this culture, and what's more, the loss that they suffered is part of the culture too. And the whole set of ceremonies, which include such fascinating wrinkles that are sort of unimaginable to us, as different people sort of abusing the dead person for, say, having cheated at cards in the last several months or whatever. But it's continuing the family, the cultural life, as it's been. The point being to say that all this is not an individual loss. All this is a loss to the community as a whole, and that's exactly how it should be treated. Well, when we're talking about mourning here, we're also talking about something else. Because one of the things that goes along with grief, I would argue, we'll be right back. Continuation of the relationship, a continuation of love. So this impossible desire for the return of the deceased may in itself be nonsense, but it spells itself out as something very palpable and very real. Well, the truth is that we don't think of someone who's lost as just plain lost. We love them, and we still love them. In fact, I would suggest that grief is the continuation of love. You might say it's the other side of it, that we love them when they're here, and now we love them while they're gone. And this commemorative impulse is a profound action tendency in itself, so that we want to do something to keep them alive.
Thank you.
add the social dimension, which is to say that grief is not something that affects just an individual, but affects a whole society, then, of course, this complex of action tendencies and keeping the person alive is all the more impressive. And it also throws into relief the problem with the American way of death, which is to sort of push it aside and not think about it as much as possible. Because the truth is that death is an essential part of our lives. Very few of us are willing to make the sacrifices that the ancient Stoics and the ancient Buddhists made, cutting attachments as much as possible. And even they, of course, didn't really do it. Because the truth is we realize that love and grief are just two sides of the same coin. Now let me finish the lecture on a more joyous note. Because grief, in some cultures, often carries with it and joy. An Irish wake is perhaps an excellent example, but what it is first of all a commemoration, a celebration of the person who's just been lost, but perhaps more importantly, it is also a celebration of being alive. In longer lectures, I will sometimes talk about grief and gratitude at the same time, because it seems to me these are two importantly kindred emotions. And it seems to me that an important aspect of grief is precisely appreciating what it is to be alive and what it is to be together and to have been together. And so there's a sense in which it is not so much a loss as much as it's a continuing gain.
ball and chain. A cell. Not now or ever. I don't divert.
עד כאן, Brain Trust, עם אופר טיסר.
אתם מאזינים לרדיו הקצה, KZ.